Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Friday, September 23rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and look for the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner and click on that, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it makes it far easier for us to live into the intention we have with this show, because you'll probably start having comments or questions, answers, or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press the number 1 on your phone. That will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll announce you by your area code and turn on your microphone. Alternatively, you could send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. And you can email me at tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. So, we have plenty of time for comments, questions, answers, testimonials. We have been working through the Way of Mastery, and we've been reviewing lesson 21 for the second time, reading through it. And because of comments in the support group and a question that we received on Wednesday, we've been going back through the portion of lesson 21 where it indicates that we do not perceive the world. We don't know or understand the world. We are interacting with this thing we call perception, with this set of pictures and interpretations and best guesses, these hallucinations, illusions, delusions that we create. And this is a real mind bender. This is a serious challenge for anybody that has been raised at least in a Western mind and then encounters work like this. I mean, lesson 21, part of the section that we were reading for the third or fourth time, says very clearly, you do not know the world. You only know your perceptions. And your perceptions are your best guesses. Your perceptions are programmed into you from your past experiences and your language and your culture and your family. We have neuroscience today that tells us that every time our mind creates a picture or an interpretation of the world around us, only about 20% of that image or knowledge or understanding, only about 20% of it is coming from the light energy that hits our eyes and the sound energy that hits our ears. The other 80% of it is coming from our past experience. We are quite literally living in our past experience. We're living continuously worried about the future and upset about the past, or feeling fearful that the past might play out again in the future. And so this teaching is trying to get us to understand that the antithesis, the opposite of what we were taught in the Western cultural world, which is use your mind, figure things out, sit in school, listen to the lecture, take your notes of what the professor was saying, and then when she gives you the test, spit it back out on the test, get the right answer, be better than other people because you have the right answer. It's a pat answer. It can be spelled out. The opposite of that is to approach life as an infinite series of mysteries. The opposite of that is to approach life with the understanding that you yourself are a mystery. You don't know when you were created, by whom or what, how you were created. This whole experience of life that we have been trained to think of as solid and predictable and simply known is an infinite series of mysteries. And so the Western mind is at least going to bristle, if not shout and fight back aggressively, when a teaching comes along and says, become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. And then it goes on to say, only the mind that is free can allow all things. The mind that judges and resists and claims to know that it's right and someone else is wrong, that mind is imprisoned. Because the very definition of imprisonment in this sense is insisting that what I perceive on the outside needs to change. And I never think that the mechanism that I'm using to create those images needs to change. The way the text reads that is, become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. The mind that is free can do this. The mind that is imprisoned cannot. For the mind that is imprisoned is so because it insists that what it perceives should become different in itself, but that the perceiver need not change. And that is the very essence of imprisonment. One who cultivates that ability to allow is cultivating, in truth, the very act of forgiveness. As defined in this book, forgiveness is the dismantling of false perceptions. It is releasing the world from the mind's insistence that the mind's perceptions be held as right. It is releasing from itself the need to hold on to its perceptions. Therefore, allow all things, trust all things, embrace all things, and thereby transcend all things. Allowance flows on the heels of desire. For when you desire the kingdom above all things, you have no choice but to discover that you must allow the world to be as the world is. For you have not known how the world is. You have only known your perceptions of it. But the Comforter will heal those perceptions. And that requires your little willingness to let your perceptions be changed. As they are changed, the world magically becomes a different place. It does become transparent and harmless. It becomes virtually valueless, except for the value that the Comforter would give it. And this is only while it lasts, because everything that's birthed in time ends in time. Allowance, beloved friends, is a process of letting go and trusting. It is a process of saying, I wonder what it would be like to just let things be as they are, to notice them and let them pass by. Allowance then is the doorway through which Christ passes into the complete remembrance of Christ. Allowance brings a deepening sense of freedom. Freedom from all circumstance. For it is your circumstances that you have believed have the power to imprison you. That's a critically important line. That's why it's in italics. It is your circumstances that you have believed have the power to imprison you. No circumstance has the power to imprison you. You are free to choose anew. Course in Miracles, over and over, choose again. Way of Mastery. Endless repetitions of choice, choose, your choices, choose again, etc. You only, from the very first axiom on the fifth page of this, you only experience what is the result of your own choice. But as you choose to relinquish your perception of the world or any circumstance, you discover that you are already abiding in freedom. The power, and that is what freedom is a power to create differently. And to create is the effect of what you will choose to see. So this is creating your internal experience by how you choose to interpret and respond to the life events. Now again, I can hear echoing in my head the people who will listen to this and say, now you're just telling me to sit like a bump on a log and do nothing and allow hell and everything to go to hell in a handbasket. That's not what I get out of this. That's not what I have seen occur in the lives of people who have really applied these teachings in their lives. What I have seen is people who get more and more active in their life, in their families, in their communities, in their teaching ministries or whatever you want to call them, they get more and more active, but they're acting from a different source. They're not acting from the space of having judged, that is bad, that is wrong, we have to stop that, we have to fight against that, we have to wipe that out, we have to, they're acting from a space of calm, loving, respect for self and others, acknowledgement of what is, embracing what is. Because unless I acknowledge and embrace and study what is, I can't work with it. I can't affect a change in something I don't even allow, accept, understand, and embrace. I can't truly add my energy to something unless I first understand what my true energy is and what the true energy that's giving rise to the people and events around me is. And how I get that understanding is completely outside the realm of the conscious logical mind, or what this book calls the intellect. It's completely experiential. It comes to those who ask to be shown. It comes to those who learn to quiet the chattering of the mind. It comes to those who learn to watch how actively their mind judges itself, judges others, judges people, judges circumstances. This knowledge, this wisdom, this different experience is accessible to everyone. And that source of access, that point of access for people, is inside the person. It's not out on some mountaintop with some guru. It's not hidden in a book. I can't even begin to tell you the people. And I've run into a couple of them already. Here we are. We're in September. We're on September 23rd or whatever today is. And from January 10th through September, 5 days a week, we've been looking at this book, and we're only on page 253. And I know the people who are chomping at the bit. I know some people who've read ahead because they want to hear the ending. They want to get the, you know, the magic. They want to get the answer. And I'm sorry to say, the answer is not at the end of the book. Please, if you feel any tension or any letdown, take a breath. Hold it for 2 or 3 seconds at the top and slowly resist the exhale. Soften and breathe. There is no magical answer in the 35th lesson. I had a friend that did a 4-year study. He recently told me about this just a few weeks ago. He did a 4-year study with a spiritual teacher. A whole group of people doing this, and every week they would get these assignments, and he would work on them religiously for 4 years. And for the whole 4 years, he had been hearing stories about other people who'd finished the 4 years, and their final session was this glorious, you know, life-expanding, great revelations, deep transformation. And he was just looking forward to it for 4 years. And when he finally had his last session, he was devastated. He said, I didn't get anything. I didn't feel anything. And essentially, my take on a situation like that was because he didn't let himself have an experience he was trying to create, an experience he had been imagining. And as Guy Finley says, the new can't be known. So if you go out in search of an experience and you know what you want to feel, you've already experienced it. And you're not going to find anything new. You're just going to create either repeats of a past experience or disappointment that you couldn't recreate it. So, I'll say it again. I know there are people who are saying, my God, Dr. Tim, this is the third or fourth day that you've reread that same paragraph. Why don't we get on with it and find out where it goes next? Because it doesn't go anywhere. You are the prize. Dale Allen Hoffman likes to quote St. Francis of Assisi, who said, when you go out in search of God or light or love or enlightenment, what you are looking for is what is doing the looking. Your true essence, the space within you that can connect you to the Christ mind or you to the one mind, is what you're looking for. You cannot find that outside of yourself. So hidden here is not even presented as an exercise, but I'm offering that here on page 253 of The Way of Mastery is a life-changing exercise. Become willing to be one who cultivates the ability to allow all things. We get it. You're not going to be able to allow all things when you start this. If you've been conditioned, if you've been trained into the English language, which is a language of separation and division and judgment and conflict, if you have been raised on this continent, you have been trained to fight for what's right, to believe in what you believe in, to go to war against people who believe differently, to have road rage and think you're justified in it because if that person cut you off, etc. You are not going to be able to just read this sentence and say, okay, I allow all things. It won't happen. You have a tremendous momentum within you. And that momentum within you hides from you one of the deep truths that's stated later on in this page. Several paragraphs later, it says, for you have not known how the world is. You don't get to see the world. All you get to see is the images, illusions, hallucinations, and best guesses that your mind makes up about the world. And they, those best guesses, those hallucinations, delusions, illusions, those perceptions, they're in error more often than not. And how can you know when they're in error? Because you feel tight, you feel tense, you feel any negative emotion, you feel the energy of contraction or judgment. I was listening to a thing that Dale Allen Hoffman did on Sunday where he took part of the Mark Gospel and he had the photocopies of the Kabor's manuscript and he was reading it from the ancient Aramaic and then giving valid interpretations of it, moved into the Greek and then into the English. And then coming back and talking about how the actual meaning from the ancient Aramaic is so different than what the Greeks would have interpreted and what the English language and English-speaking people would have made of this. And one of the points he was making that sank in a little deeper to me this time, and I've heard it dozens of times from him and other teachers, but one of the points he was making was that God, Allah, is all that is. And so everything is arising within the creation or the creator or the essence of what is connected to the essence of what is, energy fields within energy fields within energy fields. So there is nothing that is not Alaha. There is nothing, including anyone who's listening to this, that is not in existence inside of the field of creation. And the field of creation is all there is. And that which gave rise to creation is all that is. And it's only our Western mind and our Newtonian physics that talk about how two objects can't occupy the same space and time at the same time. It's only that kind of thinking that isolates and separates and tries to measure everything that turns it into a paradox, when in truth it's just the deep truth. And the deep truth is everything in this universe is far bigger and expansive than anything you've ever imagined, and everything in this universe exists within a space smaller than the head of a pin. And this is not just a mental exercise like a koan to catch the mind so it spins and then gets tired and then something else can come up. This is recognizing that what we can perceive with our conscious logical mind in the five senses is just a tiny fraction of the essence of what is. And so for us to have a different kind of an experience, we have to move into these exercises. We have to be willing to do something differently with our mind energy and with our breath and with our openness and allowance. And so this is not about just sit on the couch and just let people walk all over you and just hold flowers in your hands and shout peace to people. This is about something far more radically, fundamentally, profoundly deeper in a change agent kind of a way. This is ushering yourself into an experience of existence, power, flow, your true nature and the true nature of everyone and everything around you by using your mind differently. Using your mind to notice how often you judge and then release the judgment. Using your mind to notice the earliest warning signs of the tension, the constriction, the upset, the pain, the fear, the sadness, the guilt, the shame, and just breathe through it. Soften and release your identification with it. The text goes on and says, allowance can be thought of as a resistance being melted from the nervous system. And the nervous system is just an aspect of your mind anyway. Allowance is like the opening of the palms of the hands. Instead of holding on so tightly, you simply let go. What do you let go of? You let go of the habit of the need to be right. The habit of the need to perceive the world is a fearful place. Every reality management worksheet has us practicing by saying, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of the experiences I've had in the past and the brain cells that are firing in my mind to hallucinate the proof the evidence all arranged in a nice order, stacked on top of itself, to prove that my pained and fearful experience, my view of the world is right. That's almost exactly what's being said here at the bottom of page 253 in The Way of Mastery. What do you let go of? You let go of the need to be right and the habit of the need to perceive that the world is a fearful place. What's Dr. Michael Rice's seven-step worksheet have to say about that? On the right-hand side of the worksheet process, it says, and I quote, "I cancel my need to be right, and I cancel my need to make up another story out of these brain cells or the content of my mind to hallucinate proof that my fear/hostility-based story, my reality, is true. I cancel my need to insist that my fear and hostility-based story and my reality is true." Here's The Way of Mastery, page 235. What do you let go of? You let go of the habit of the need to be right and the habit of the need to perceive that the world is a fearful place. I'm trying to share with you how my eye and my ear are seeing a powerful similarity between page 235 in The Way of Mastery and what Dr. Michael Rice has distilled out of his work with the Kabor's manuscript and A Course in Miracles and other texts that he's distilled into the Reality Management Worksheet. And Michael Rice is somebody who's never read, as far as I know, The Way of Mastery. And whatever parts of it he's read, he's found some language in it that he thinks, nope, this isn't the right stuff. And yet, there it is. You can look at it for yourself. Page 253 in the very last sentence of that paragraph. What do you let go of? You let go of the habit of the need to be right, the habit of the need to perceive that the world is a fearful place, the habit of perceiving that you are in lack, the habit of perceiving that Christ must be far from you. Anything that is unlike the kingdom of heaven is a habit well worth releasing by allowing it to be dissolved from your mind. The essence of this lesson is the cultivation of allowance. It begins with the willingness to relinquish the lid you have placed upon your own mind, so that you become able, in innocence, to simply observe how the world really is, what is really going on down in the basement, without judgment, without fear, without justification, without any explanation. It's simply there. It's there in your mind. It's there unfolding in life in front of you. It does not need your judgment. It does not need you to identify with it or push against it. The text goes on and says, the cultivation of allowance will deepen a great deal if you will merely put the exercise that we began this chapter with, this lesson with, into practice. What's that exercise? Take these nine statements and write them on nine separate sheets of paper. And for each of those nine, give it an entire week for you to come back to it and respond to it and see what wants to argue against these nine statements. Number one, it's not possible for you to be without love. Number two, it's not possible for you to be alone. Number three, it's not possible for you to taste death. Number four, it's not possible for you to taste genuine loss. Number five, it's not possible for you to suffer the dream of separation. Number six, it's not possible for you to be apart from your Creator. Number seven, it's not possible for you to fail. Number eight, it's not possible for you to harm anyone or anything. Number 9, it's not possible for you to be guilty of sin. This process, the cultivation of allowance, will deepen a great deal if you will simply put each of those statements on a piece of paper at the top of the page, and then one at a time, take 1 week for each of those statements, and pull it out whenever you have the interest to do so, and let yourself read the statement at the top, and breathe and soften and see what inside of you wants to say, well, that's wrong, that's not right, or that might be somewhat right, but not all the way right, and well, if I believe that, then I would just sit around and do nothing. Or if I did that, I wouldn't try to correct my mistakes. All of those statements that would bubble up in you, write them down on the page. And then there's a little bit more instruction about how to continue processing with each of those statements. And if you do that, you will cultivate allowance at a deeper and deeper level. You will uncover within you beliefs, traumas, rigid thoughts, negative conclusions that you've been holding on to that you didn't know were there, and yet every time they get resonated or activated into a higher energy frequency, they become the things that drive your behavior. The text goes on and says, in allowance, you cultivate the very quality of forgiveness. The quality of forgiveness in this book is the process of dismantling your negative perceptions. Well, if I'm judging something, I'm not allowing it to be what it is. If I'm saying that's wrong, that shouldn't happen, that person's an idiot, I'm an idiot, when I'm doing that, I'm not in allowance. And I'm creating a perception that is very time-limited and very, very specific. It's like taking a pinhole camera photo of the Grand Canyon and thinking you know what the Grand Canyon is. So the text reads, in allowance, you cultivate the very quality of forgiveness. Without forgiveness, it is impossible to awaken into the realization of the truth that is true always. Capital T, truth, is true always. Why is that? Because judgment is the opposite of the kingdom. Earlier it is said, judgment is the opposite of love. Judgment is the opposite of the kingdom. Wherever you refuse to dismantle your false perceptions, in other words, wherever forgiveness is withheld, you are literally making a choice to be outside the kingdom. You have used the power of the mind to make a decision, and you made that decision out of a desire to hold on to a perception, and thereby you've generated a direct experience, that doesn't exist anywhere in the universe except in your mind. I remember one time I had some friends who are professional musicians, and we went to a performance, Lyle Lovett, near the top of his career, and he had quite mature, and he had assembled this collection of professional musicians that were all of them right there, mature, solid, you know, before they've started to decline physically, they're just really good, in the pocket. And I remember going to this concert, and I was amazed. The stand-up bass player, the drummer, the lead guitar, the rhythm guitar, the percussionist that was playing the congas and the triangles and just amazing stuff, and sitting next to this professional musician who just kept criticizing every time any little rim shot was off or any little syncopation showed itself to be out of rhythm. And I was just amazed that she could sit there and she did not enjoy this magnificent performance. And we were leaving and people were just beaming and gushing about how wonderful it was. And the entire walk to the car, all this woman did was talk about what was off. That experience of errors and a ruined concert didn't happen anywhere but within her mind, because she was clinging to the perceptions she created and the insistence that her perceptions were right. She hadn't developed the habit of letting go of the need to be right. She had not cultivated allowance. She was kicking herself out of the garden. She could have spent that evening literally in the Garden of Eden, in this perfected, glorious space of just letting these tones and songs and the wonderful synchronization between these clearly master musicians wash over her. So the text goes on and says, remember then that always forgiveness, the dismantling of your negative perceptions, is essential. It is essential for the atonement, for the recognition that we are all one. Forgiveness is another word for allowance. We speak here not of a blind passivity, but of a relinquishment within one's own mind, and that is all. It is a willingness to see the complete neutrality of all events. It is a willingness to let the comforter remind you that separation does not exist, that you cannot possibly make yourself guilty of sin and all the rest. Forgiveness is a relinquishment of what you have decided is true about the world. I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of these brain cells to hallucinate proof that my fear and hostility-based reality, my story is true. That's forgiveness. It is then very much a self-centered practice. Of yourself, you cannot forgive your brother or sister for anything because they've never done anything to you. Forgiveness is forgiveness of oneself for insisting on replacing capital R reality, the actuality of life, with your own version of it. What's the actuality of life? In lesson three, this book talks about how the actuality of life is everything you see coming out of a fellow human being is either the extension of love in form or a cry for help and healing. And if you see it as anything else, it's you insisting that your hallucination is more accurate than the flow of life. The text goes on and says, allowance is like the petals of a flower opening to embrace the new dawn of a spring day. Allowance is like the melting of the ice that allows the river to flow. Allowance is like the removing of a cap from a bottle of sweet fragrance and enjoying it as deeply as you can. Allowance is the dissolution of fear. Allowance is transformation. The text goes on and says, when you have come to allow all things, to trust all things, to embrace all things, that's the goal. Only that one who is larger than the thing that is embraced can do the embracing. Therefore, whenever you feel imprisoned, it's because you've made yourself feel as though you are smaller than the world you perceive. It's a hallucination. And when you feel free, it is because you have remembered that you are the one from which all things have arisen. You are the offspring of creation itself. You are the vast sky in which all clouds and all storms arise, pass away, and the sky remains completely unscathed, eternally changeless. That is freedom. And the cultivation of freedom is a free will choice. You do not have to do any of the exercises in this book. You do not have to recognize that you're free. You can continue to create impressions and mounting evidence that the world's a horrible place and that you're a victim and that you have to fight against that personal party and that political party and that person over here and that. You can continue to do that. Freedom and the cultivation of freedom is a free will choice. If you desire to know the kingdom, you will cultivate freedom. The only way to do that is to learn to allow all things. The last section, last paragraph in that section reads, as you come to truly forgive yourself for every perception you've ever held about anyone or anything, you will come to discover that it means relinquishing perceptions of yourself as well. Forgiveness in this work is dismantling your perceptions. Instead of creating an image of what's going on in your life, deciding what it is, deciding if it's right or wrong or good or bad, you allow all things and you ask to be shown, what's mine to do here? How can I contribute to the flow of creation in this moment? How can I extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in this moment? And as we've talked about, people who do that end up being even more active. This is not about giving up participation in the world. This is about sourcing the inspiration, the intelligence, the wisdom, and the motivation to interact in the world from a source outside of your intellect and all of the trivialities that have been programmed into it. It is about sourcing your motivation for action from the rooted center of your being. Getting in touch with your true nature and the true nature of everyone and everything around you, and then acting from that. That's the meaning of the word in the ancient Aramaic that was translated into the English word faith. Get in connection. Go inside. Ask the great comforter, the Holy Spirit, the Christ mind. Become consciously aware of your true nature. Ask to be shown what to do, and let your actions flow from that. The text goes on and says, for you cannot awaken fully unless you include yourself in the circle of your forgiveness. In other words, in the circle of your dismantling your negative perceptions. Ultimately, of course, you come to see that the very practice of allowance is really the act of allowing yourself to truly be the capital S self that you are. You will no longer resist the process of purification by whatever means the comforter uses for you. It simply does not matter anymore. You have the perspective that says, why resist? All I want is God, and God is everything that happens. Guy Finley has a line where he says, all good things come to those for whom the good is all things. For whom the people who've understood that there is only Allah, there is only creation, and we are all a part of it. The text goes on and says, if it is dissolved in the mind in a split second and you do not even notice it, fine. And if it requires great tears and great experiences in the world, that's fine too. There's no difference. They're really the same. It's because you've relinquished, through allowing, your sense of ownership of your pathway home. You've decided to let the comforter take you home. You've decided to ask and receive, to ask and be shown. Because you desire the kingdom above all else, it no longer matters how that process is experienced. You no longer complain that it seems to be taking too long. You simply enjoin yourself in the process of life itself. you let the Comforter take you by the hand and retrace the steps that you once made in error. Each step requires allowance, which is forgiveness, born of desire that has been purified of that desire which imprisons. The desire they're talking about here, one desire is the energy of life force of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment. Another type of desire they're talking about here is what my intellect tells me, what's been programmed into me by my family and my culture. What are the trappings of success? I need those. I need this kind of car. I need this kind of body. I need this kind of relationship. That is a desire that imprisons, and the one that frees comes from allowance, that flows from a desire to be in alignment with all of creation. Once your desire begins and becomes the kingdom, the end of the journey is perfectly certain. School is out. That which the ego is cannot last as your driving force. For the very universe, creation, the world around you, all of these things will breathe together, conspire, working together under the hand of the Holy Spirit to create precisely what you require to be completely free of all illusion. And secretly, you will have already agreed with the Comforter that it will be this way. Allowance, then, is equally as important as desire. And this is an aspect of that pathway, that foundation, whereby Christ remembers Christ and arises from the ego's ashes to walk upon this plane, and any plane, as the truth that is true always. Remember that it is only the ego that will compare and contrast. It is only the egoic mind that thinks about somebody else's path and then wonders if their path is better than your own. There is only the life that you are directly experiencing. And through desire and allowance, that very life comes to be embraced as the very means by which the Comforter is dissolving illusion from your mind. Of course, it's all based on the humility of realizing that the ego cannot awaken itself, that the Comforter is that agency given by grace that knows how to bring you home. So what's next? What's next is highly recommended. Establish a relationship with the Comforter. Treat your inner wisdom, your inner voice, as though it were your best friend. Learn to ask moment to moment, what's mine to do here? Which way should I turn? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? What's a way to look at this situation that will allow me to be flooded with gratitude for the breath of life and the gift of awareness itself? So, here we are. We're at a Friday. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. That's all I'm going to read and reread. And I'm really, really sorry that there isn't any big answer coming. And even if we race ahead in the way of mastery, we're not going to get that big gem, because there have been gems on every page. And for those of you who are chomping at the bit to move ahead and see what in lesson 22 and lesson 24, and oh my gosh, let's get to the book, the third book in the way of mastery, the way of knowing. Because right now we're stuck in the way of transformation, because Dr. Tim won't keep reading the same paragraph over and over again. So if that's happening for you, please breathe, soften, ask yourself how what's happening inside you is the very pathway that you could use to spring forward, to have the freedom. Area code 610, is this Susan?
It is. Nobody else is on the line?
Well, there are people on the line, but nobody else is putting their hand up.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you know, I was just in the grocery store, and the woman ahead of me, our wonderful grocery chain here has banned plastic bags, and the woman in front of me, even though it's been advertised for weeks, blew up and started saying, nobody told me, and what am I going to do? And I'm standing behind her, hating her, just thinking, you dumbbell. I mean, Dr. Tim, I needed to hear this whole thing. Because I was right. I was right about the bags, and I was so glad they banned plastic bags. But what you're talking about the need to be right. And I'm wondering if it's more like this profound wish to be right. Do we really need to be right? Because if we think it's a need, it's like a need like food and water. And this is just really pathetic, this thing of instantly judging people, which I do all the time, and I'm so sick of it. And yet I can't imagine stopping doing it. All I can imagine is stepping back enough to catch my mind, watch my mind, choose another way, and then feel like a hypocrite because I really am mad and I want to be right. I mean, I'm just stuck there. So the fact that you're reading this over and over, will we ever get out of it? Because I'm going to need this for the rest of my life. So anyway, that's my comment.
It's like any other, Deep Truth by Jack Handy, right? It's like any other deep truth. These things that we need in the beginning of our path, our journey, our prayer, our meditation, we will need at the end. It's not like we outgrow the core tools. So I will always need to be vigilant for how I am judging myself and others. I'm not looking for a time, at least within the physical body, where I no longer judge anyone. I will be absolutely thrilled if I can catch those judgments sooner and sooner, and with a breath and with a softening and with the willingness, this little smidgen of willingness to allow, I can ease the tension in me and ask to be shown another way to look at this person, myself, and this situation. I'll be thrilled if I can do that in a breath or two. I'm not gonna hold off the celebration until I can go through 40 years without a single judgment.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. I just started breathing again. That was a good answer. Thank you. It's like giving permission to not be there already.
Well, and look what happens. When you do that, you're judging yourself.
Yeah.
And we just finished reading that this allowance, once I learn to allow other people, then I have to realize, oh my gosh, I have to allow myself. I have to turn that same willingness to allow onto myself. And if I cannot include myself in that process, I haven't included anything. So thank you for raising your hand here at the end. I will mute you so you can listen to the transition. 760, hold on, and after the transition, Michael and or Jeannie will turn on your microphone as appropriate. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you. And thanks for playing the show for us for the last couple of days.
You're quite welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show and a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is September the 23rd, 2022. And their call-in number is 563 888-999-3581 and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in, and I'll direct you to our website, whyagain.org. Click on either the Start Here or the Bullseye. Both of those take you to the same place where you'll find audios, videos, all of the worksheets, and special MP3 shows that walk you through the worksheet. And we just ask you to look around, and if you find something that's not working or not, you know, a URL isn't connecting or something, please let me know. Drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know about it. And we do, I'll let Michael know that we do already have a hand up, and he's dialing in. Aria's kind of got him sidetracked there. I'm going to welcome Ann, 760. You're on the air. How you doing, Ann?
Hey, well, I'm on the road. I'm traveling.
Yeah, it sounds like you're driving.
Who are you? Yeah. On the way to South Carolina to my daughter's. I dialed in to Dr. Kim just about the last 20 minutes or so. I realized, well, I was listening to a tribute to Ramsey Lewis, and they were playing the Chicago Jazz Festival. I go, oh, wait, I could use, you know, some of what Dr. Kim was talking about. And it was just a reminder that, I mean, and I got to smile some more than I was already smiling because I just, you know, so far the trip, I just had a bathroom break, and then pretty soon here in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to be charging my car. And
I was just getting ready to ask you if you still had the electric car.
Yes, but I have, my model has a backup. I have a whopping 2 gallons of gas that runs the generator so that I'm out of battery right now, so I'm running, I'm not out of it, but I'm running on the generator, and it continues to charge my battery. So it's working well. I had upgraded a year ago to a 2020, so it, all the improvements have been there, and it's, you know, phenomenal of the extra power and distance that I get. So I'm going to be stopping in Brunswick, and my plan is to do 80% because it charges pretty fast, like in 45 minutes at 80%. And then I'll go to Pooler and do 100%, and that should get me up to Camden, which is just north, let's see, southeast of Columbia, South Carolina. So anyway, it was just a blessing to be reminded of the things, you know, of the non-judgmental, to stay out of that. And so far, I had prayed this morning, okay, Lord, show me where I can be a blessing or a help or something. And you wouldn't think it would be in a gas station regarding a bathroom, but that's where it was. So I could laugh at that, you know, when I got on the road. I go, okay, all right, I'll take that.
That's awesome.
So,
good job.
Anyway, so anyway, but I knew that, you know, sometimes when it switches over, you know, you see me, and sometimes, you know, you don't. But anyway, I had just gotten off a road trip in a motorhome with my stepdaughter and her family. We went up to Stone Mountain, Georgia, and that was pretty cool with 4 cats in there in the motorhome as well, 2 adults and 2 kittens. And now I'm going to my daughter's with 3 dogs. So
nice. Good job.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoy it and have a good restful time and good family time. We actually were gone the last 2 days. I have one brother who goes down to Columbia, South America, and stays for like 6 weeks at a time, and then he comes back home for about 6 weeks, and he gets back down for 6 weeks. He's a pilot, and he had to do some simulation training in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so he was going to go up and meet with my brother who lives in Salisbury, North Carolina. And I said, well, I'm going to come too. So Michael and I drove up and had lunch with Stephen and then had dinner with Tim and Stephen both. And then we drove back yesterday. So it was a quick trip, but it was a lot of fun getting with family. So I hope you enjoy your time as well.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I'm going to be dog sitting for part of it. My daughter and son-in-law are going to a wedding in Colorado, so which I know the people, but, you know, I get to dog sit. But it's okay. They have the fence up in their backyard, so I'm okay with that.
Awesome. Good job.
Anyway.
Well, you just be safe on the rest
of
your journey. Michael is with us if you have any question or anything. Michael, did you hear her saying that she was able to be a blessing, actually, in a rest stop? So
sweet. I hadn't gotten on by that point. I had been on for a few minutes, but I didn't hear the rest stop happening. What happened?
Yeah. Well, no, it was just I stopped a bathroom stop, and it was at a gas station, and the person before me had kind of, well, we talk frankly on this show, a bowel movement that kind of stopped up the toilet. And there was only one woman and one, you know, single stall bathrooms in this gas station. So I was using the men's, and the person before me, you know, was getting rid of something. So when I went to flush, it didn't flush, and so I let the attendant know. And when I came back to get my cash from getting my all of, you know, half a gallon of gas, I said, keep the change, and he thanked me. He appreciated the fact that I had let him know about the toilet. And so, you know, it's like, hey, thanks, God, because I'll take it wherever you can show me what I need to do. So, and it was just a reminder, listen to Dr. Tim, hey, ask to be shown, you know, and that's what I started out with this morning. So I'm just blessed and good to hear you guys had your trip, and I'm looking forward to getting off here and charging my car in a few minutes.
Cool. Well, travel safely. Enjoy having time with family.
Yes. Thank you. Blessings, y'all.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, I had talked with Susan this morning, and she said that she had a question, too. So is she on with us?
She is. I'm going to turn her microphone on right now. Hi, Susan.
Hey, young lady. Welcome. Hello, Susan. Are you with us? She might just be dialed in and doing something else because she hadn't had her hand up. It's pretty tiny. I've got Aria watching a video on relative heart sizes here, from the 20-pound, 25-pound giraffe heart to the mouse's little tiny heart. Are you still there, Jeannie?
610, Susan, you're on.
Okay, she may be away from her phone. Anyway, welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. Delighted that we get to participate in this conversation. My apology for missing you yesterday and the day before. As Jeannie said, we were traveling. And Jeannie had done the work of digging out the videos on the book on CD. And Aria's wanting me to change videos for her. In any event, you got the first 2 hours of that in, and the next time that we're going to play a show, we'll do hour three and go through and do all 6 hours of the book on CD. Aria's whispering instructions to me on which video to show her, to put on for her. That's it. I put it on. So the that's it. Oops. Excuse me. You're right. I missed it. I'm back. Okay. So the book on CD, it was interesting how that came into existence. My son, Michael J., had wanted to learn about computers when he was 13. He was homeschooled till he was about 13. And then selected a go to a school in North Carolina, a residential school that was kind of out in the woods, actually very much like Heartland, where they had buildings where each of the students, there were about, I think, 6 or 8 students in each building with a house leader, and they did everything. They collected their own firewood and made their own food and cleaned up and maintained. They did everything. And so it was a really practically oriented school that, of course, also had the reading, writing, and arithmetic. But when he turned 15, he decided he wanted to learn about computers, and I had a friend student named Graham Gibson, who is the voice that you heard on the book with me. He was playing the character, as I played myself in the book. And actually, Graham has a computer school, and he had, when Michael Jay was ready to do computers, he went to school at Graham's, and partway through his education there, we want to mute somebody there, Jeannie. Graham called me one day. He'd been doing this work for several years. He had a studio as well as a computer school, and said that he had the guidance that it was the next piece of his spiritual work was to play the character in the book and to assist me in recording the book on CD. So Graham set that up, and it was really interesting because aside from being a computer genius, he's a former NASA computer scientist. You've heard me tell the story about I'm going to handle a problem with the computer. It was Graham that figured out what the manufacturer of the computer couldn't do in two return trips to their factory. In any event, Graham was also an actor, and when he played the part of the character Richard, he really tapped into it, got into it, and ended up with heart palpitations and all kinds of symptomatic things that he went through personally as he got into that character. So it was a really powerful spiritual journey for him to play that role, and so we appreciate Graham. He's actually passed now. About 3 years ago, he passed away, but this was 20-some years ago that we did the book on CD. So we've gotten the first 2 hours. It's available to purchase if you want something you want to review and review. It's available as a download on or a streaming service that you can purchase, or it's available as a set of 6 CDs. And so if you're interested in that, you can look in the catalog, and there's the book on CD, all 6 hours. And you can also, there's a digital version of it as well, so that you can load it on your phone or on your computer, what have you, listen anytime, anywhere. So that's just one of the tools that we have out there. And yesterday we did the Hear My Voice book club in London, England. Did a worksheet session. We don't have the video back yet, but we'll make sure to post that. And actually, the woman who runs the book on CD club is going to post it all on YouTube, so that any of the sessions we've done, we've been doing it now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. So all of those videos will be available, and you can give them a listen and tap in. We've been studying the book, going by chapter by chapter, and we've done, I think, 3 or 4 different worksheet sessions. So lots of support for getting into and understanding the worksheet process and putting it to work. And delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. And is Susan back yet, Jeannie?
Well, let's see if she's at her phone. 610, you're on the air.
Hey, howdy, guys. Yeah, I'm here. And if I was the one you had to mute because of noise, I'm sorry. I didn't know my noise was making it. Yeah. Okay.
We're good.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. How was your dad, Jeannie?
Well, we ended up... go ahead, sweetie.
I was just going to say, we were going to go visit him this morning. And as we got down the road and we dropped a package off... at CVS, they ship UPS, and so we dropped a package off, and as I was pulling out of their parking lot, the airs just started going down on one of my tires, and so we pulled into Firestone. By the time we got through with that, it was too late to go drive across town to visit Dad, because I had to be at the school to pick up Aria at noon, And so we just came back to the house here, and I had left my phone here at the house. So I came in and picked up my phone to see, you know, if anybody had called while I was gone. And sure enough, where Dad's at the American house, they had called, and he actually slid out of his wheelchair this morning and scraped his arms and his head. And so as soon as the radio show's over, we're going to take Aria with us and go see him. They said that they felt like he was okay, but...
got a little banged up.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I knew you were on your way there, and I knew you were having tire trouble. That was the last check-in. So there you are. Oh, I'm glad that you got the tire fixed, right? Was the tire okay?
Yeah, they checked it and said, you know, if something was in it, it had, I guess, fallen out or something, but they went ahead and fixed it and put air back in it. And so it's running good right now. So,
you know, these automatic in the car, they're tire pressure is read automatically in the car, and it appears this is one of the coolest mornings that we've had so far. It was down in the 40s today, and I think that and the mechanic sort of said that he felt like it was just that the temperature was down, so the air would contract, and that it had lowered the pressure enough to trigger the sensor, that it actually wasn't a big problem, but he did, you know, air them up and balance them and all that. So all is safe.
Oh, good.
It is good.
Yeah. So, well, I do have a couple of questions. They are nutrition questions. I had blood work done and went to the doctor and going to get the pacemaker fixed in a couple of weeks. They don't think it's an emergency, so I'm not going to think it's an emergency, but my cholesterol is high, and my dad had high cholesterol. Now, the doctor said, what kind of diet do you eat? And I said, I really eat a good diet, but I do eat eggs. And he said, stop the eggs. And I had a dish of ice cream the other day. He said, no ice cream, no sugar. I know all these things. But he said, considering your diet, you shouldn't have high cholesterol. It's not very much over the for end of okay. But he's put me on a statin drug, and I wanted to ask you about those and if there's another way around this.
Can I throw something in?
Go for it, sweetie.
Would you say, Jean?
I just asked if I could throw in a thought. a few years ago, when I had gone to the doctor, my cholesterol was high, my sugar was high, you know, there was just all kinds of things going on. And the doctor actually said my hormones were low and that if we got my hormones in balance, that everything else would take care of itself. And I do bioidentical hormones, and one of them is a cream that I put on my arms, and the other one is progesterone. I take it at night because it also helps me sleep. So I don't know if your doctor tests your hormone levels, but if your estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone get out of balance, it throws off your cholesterol and your sugar and everything else. So it may not even be actually a cholesterol problem, except that it's reacting like dominoes to your hormones.
Yeah. Well, I was put on a bioidentical hormone regimen about a year ago now. I've increased the dose to half of a troche twice a day, and I've just had blood work done to see what things look like, but this latest blood work was taken just a week ago, and I've been on those hormones, so it doesn't seem to be helping, or maybe it is. Maybe it would have been worse without them. Who knows? Also, the doctor said no coconut oil, and I've been using coconut oil to cook with, and I thought it was good for you. So I'm just confused, and not a big, huge deal, but I thought I'd ask the nutritionists, the Rice, Jeannie, and Michael.
Well, my take would be that I think your best bet would be to do some research on the impact of statin drugs.
And yeah, I've done some. Yeah, I have been reading about it. He gave me a very low dose. I don't like the sound of some of the impacts. One of them is insomnia. Who needs that?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know whether you had had. Tim Bingham has been on a statin for a long time, a low dose, and he seems, well, he's on a lot of different things. But I generally don't like taking stuff. So.
I hear you. I've got a couple things I'll send you to look at.
Okay. All right.
I hesitate with what has been said. I hesitate to make any comment that might conflict with what your doctor is doing, because I think what I would say would conflict, and I really don't want to get into that arena.
Yeah. No, but he's a medical doctor, and I'm always leery. I always want to hear the other side. I may take the stuff, but
sure.
I would like to hear what you think.
Well, many medical doctors, you know, they get maybe a 2 or 3 hours of nutrition training in medical school, maybe a half a dozen hours of training. And the training comes from special interests, like the dairy industry or, you know, the meat industry and such. And so oftentimes the level of education in that arena, now there are some medical doctors out there that are, you know, that's their whole focus, and they're like on the front lines, but sadly they're few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so,
he gave me a diet that sounds good, you know, white bread, white rice, don't do them. All the foods that I know to be good and all the foods that I know to be bad, but I'm already doing pretty much, except I eat eggs, and I guess I have to stop those. But
well, if you look at the, do some research on eggs, you know, for years, I mean, for when I became a vegetarian, and that goes back when my kids were really small, since 40 years ago, one of the things we used to do, one of the last things that went for me as a vegetarian was eggs. And, you know, I woke up one morning and my body just said, no more eggs, that's it. And for, you know, almost 40 years, I haven't touched an egg. And and then back about maybe a year or so ago, it was like my body said, eat some eggs. So now I eat eggs occasionally. In fact, yesterday morning on the way back here, we stopped for breakfast, and that's what I had at a restaurant. And my best understanding of, there is significant cholesterol in eggs, but the cholesterol in eggs, there's also lecithin in the eggs that balances and makes the cholesterol usable by the body and doesn't really create a problem. That's my best understanding of the cholesterol in eggs, and that dietary cholesterol, unless somebody's really outrageous, has very little to do with the end result of cholesterol and how the body manufactures most of the cholesterol, and it's oftentimes manufactured for protection. So that might be something to just look at, you know, on a deeper level. And I've got some links that I'll look up and send you, and you can maybe come to a little more educated conversation with your doctor about it and see what result
Thanks.
You come up with. So
I'd
that's my
that.
That's my best input there.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. So anything else exciting happening in your world? How are the boys doing? Any other thoughts, questions?
Oh, thanks. Luke is leaving school. He hopes he can get a letter from his psychiatrist saying that to leave school for mental health reasons, he's going to go home. And his mother and stepfather just got married, and they're going to be moving, and Luke can help them. And Luke is very excited about being home for a while and kind of rebooting himself, and I hope he can stay sober. So at least he's deciding he wants to stay alive for the moment, which is really wonderful. And Jacob is looking to get a cat. I told you, I think, already.
Right, you shared
that. Support cats.
Probably so be good for him.
Those are, yeah, I know. So little steps, but thanks.
What's the reasoning behind Luke getting a letter for the school in order to leave school? Can't he just sign out of school? And is there some benefit to that?
Well, it's because Tim Bingham has been paying his tuition, and we might have a chance of getting the tuition refunded.
Ah, if, I understand.
You know, and
if he's
it's
got
legitimate.
Some justification, sure.
Yeah. It would help us because we could put it toward college when he's ready to go back.
Ah,
so
cool. Well, we'll hold the space, and that all falls in place just perfectly.
Thanks. So otherwise, we're just trying to learn the lessons. But I look forward to the. Thanks for doing that evaluation. I'm always astounded that you come out with what you find out about in there. It's very easy to take it now with it online the way it is. And
definitely easier
so,
than when we have to do. Used to have to do it on paper. It
yeah,
made life so much easier.
I know. And I hope it's easier on the other end when you evaluate it, too. I don't
yes.
know how that works, but good.
Yeah, we used to have to take a paper template. We had 10 templates. We had to lay over the actual physical answer sheet that you would do, and it would work. You know, you'd do the 10 different templates, and then you'd count up the scores. I mean, it was quite a process. When we'd do an intensive, we'd have 50 people show up to do an intensive. It was a half a day's work just to do the evaluations and such, where now when people do it online, the computer spits out, you know, all that stuff that we used to mechanically have to figure out and calculate. So definitely
that's
the
wonderful.
Online system has made life easier.
Good. Okay.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much.
You're appreciative. Appreciate it, and you're welcome.
Thanks.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, Miss Jeannie. Any other thoughts for you, sweetie? Or anybody
no,
on the phone keeping a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet. So if someone presses 1, you're first in line. If you're on another channel, dial 563-999-3581 and press 1. And that lets us know that you want to talk to us. If you're already dialed in, all you have to do is press 1. It pops you up there. And there's no one in front of you, so no waiting.
You know, it's interesting, back in around 300 or so, different groups came together and determined which books would become part of what today is called the Bible. And if you read into the history of it, it's actually quite interesting how it was basically done by committee. You know, if you've ever seen something done by a committee, you know how that process can be manipulated and played. And basically the books that were canonized, you know, people lobbied for, here are my favorite books. Oh, I don't like that one. Oh, no, we don't like this one. Yes, we like that one. And so there are actually different groups that have a different, you know, set of texts that they call the Bible. One of the books that did not get into the text, and they're basically referred to as wisdom sayings of Yeshua, is the Gospel of Thomas. And I came across a quote recently from the Gospel of Thomas that, with the new brain cells that I have in understanding, you know, and really grokking the fact that the brain produces literally the world we see, that it's a construct of the mind. You've heard us talk many times about the CIA quote, with the CIA, after millions spent in researching perception specifically, the CIA basically says the mind does not reflect reality, the mind generates reality. And so that's been coming home, as we've talked about that over the last several years, coming home on new levels of understanding for me. And there's a quote from the Gospel of Thomas that just struck me. It's something that I've read a couple of times over the years, and I just accidentally came across this, but it struck me in a new way, where it says, "Recognize what is before your eyes, and what is hidden will be revealed to you." And when I've read that thought before, entertained that thought before, it came to me as recognize what's in front of you, you know, what's mechanically in front of you before your eyes, and then what is hidden from you will be revealed. And as we've worked more and more with comprehending this idea that the mind is the generator of literally of everything that we think we see with our eyes, and we don't see it with our eyes, but rather with our brain, then this quote takes on a whole new level of meaning. Recognize what happens to produce what you think your eyes see. So what comes before, it's all this mechanical resonance and content in brain cells of 1,000 generations of what's come before you. And if you recognize that and you don't fall prey to constructs of the mind that do nothing but reflect the past, and when something from the past, you know, you go back to Yeshua and he says at one point to one gentleman, he says, let the dead bury the dead, let the blind lead the blind. And what I hear him saying there is that people are blinded to the truth of the moment. They're not able to even fathom the actuality that they're living in. As long as they're locked into a construct of their mind that is the past presenting itself, you know, sort of passing itself off as the present moment. And most often when things are resonated in the mind, of course, in order for something to be resonant in the mind, it has to be there, which means it came from the past. And if the past is what makes up the pictures that we think are the present, then present, the actual gift of the moment, is hidden from us. And so looking at this, it just struck me in a way that it felt worth bringing this forward. If you recognize what it is that before your so-called eyes see anything, there's a whole past engaged in that. And that becomes a cover. That becomes, you know, there's a line in the Course in Miracles that talks about the dense cover that we put over things. And the information stored in carbon-based memory from the past generates this whole world that becomes, that layers over, that, you know, Paul talked about seeing as though through a glass darkly. And we tend to live in that past, what came before we were able to, what we think of as see something with our eyes. And once we clear that out of the way, then been hidden perhaps your whole life is going to be revealed to you. And one of the things that's going to be revealed is that the natural state of a human being is joy. You know, if you look at a newborn, and, you know, we're getting to do that with our new grandbaby that's arrived, the natural state of that human being, if the baby's diaper is empty and its belly is full, they're pretty happy campers. And if we're in a state, you know, sometimes people say, I'm miserable because that happened. I'm miserable because I didn't have a good night's sleep. I'm miserable because I'm tired. I'm cranky because it's like, that's all a lie. Our natural state is joy. And if we're not in that state of joy, something came before it that's creating this state of misery, this state of fear or, you know, disturbance or upset. And we oftentimes tell ourselves a story that we're upset because of something that happened in our world, when the truth is we're upset with what came as was referred to in this passage from Thomas, what came before our eyes, before we could see it, what's in that structure that needs to be cleaned up. So if we, you know, are feeling miserable, if we're cranky, if we're in, you know, we go around with a scowl on our face, something came before that that can be cleaned out so we can go back to our natural state as human beings, go back to the natural condition of joy that we're designed to live in. And this work, and in particular, the forgiveness process, the genius that was presented 2,000 years ago by Yeshua in Aramaic of how to collapse the perceptual constructs of your mind so that you had a chance to really experience yourself free of preconditions, to experience yourself as your newborn self, all joy attached, with functioning as the presence of love, rather than what came before, that most of the world's just accepted, well, you know, I'm miserable because. And to recognize there's no because. If you're in disturbance or depression or pain, there's no because except that there's something in there that came before this moment that you can take charge of and clean out with the forgiveness tool. Actually, with each of the tools that we teach, each tool we teach is designed to support and empower people to clean up the conditions in their mind that came before perception happened, before their eyes could, you know, so-called see a particular situation. Something's there. And that something, with forgiveness, can be removed. And, you know, if you're looking for something in your perceptual world, if you're looking for something to show up in your actuality so that your perception can move toward happiness, then you're looking for something that can't cause happiness. Well, pardon me. I use that word incorrectly. Happiness, yes, because happiness is nothing but a dopamine hit that comes, you know, dopamine's kind of your happy powder. And when you achieve a goal, bingo, you get that dopamine hit, so you say, I'm happy. But people who rely on that for their joy, or as a substitute to joy, have to have one thing, another thing, another thing, another thing, another thing, and it has to keep going in order to keep that dopamine hit going. And then it gets to the point where dopamine gets overused, and when dopamine gets overused, there's a shortage of it. Now there's depression that occurs. When we look into and apply forgiveness around the circumstances that seem to cause depression, the pain, the trauma, the lack of happiness, when we apply forgiveness, then those preconditions are removed. And as they're removed, we get to step back to and experience ourselves as who we are, experience ourselves in our natural state. And that's it's a simple picture of why we're here doing this work, why we're having this conversation, why we've been doing this radio show for 11 years. So recognize what is before your eyes. So using the word before, not as in front of your eyes, but on the timeline, what came before, what's in the past that's replicating itself and pretending to be something that's in the moment. You know, it's interesting how malleable our perceptual constructs are, how the mind can take virtually anything that's moving in it and squeeze it through a filter that turns it into something that it is not. And that forgiveness, when you recognize what it is and how it works from the first century Aramaic, is a way to collapse those constructs that deliver to us the pain of the past in a form that's massaged into making it look like it's justified by something that's occurring in the present. And, of course, that means that people have all kinds of fantasies about how, well, I'm only miserable because you said this or you did that or you don't do this the way I want you to do it, or you tell me that I have to do it differently, or, you know, there are 1,000 excuses, which then changes the way the mind massages its content into perception. And the mind will always tend, you know, it's like that rule of inertia. If you remember from physics class in high school, a body moving in a particular direction at a particular set of rate of speed will tend to continue moving in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. We could call a rule of perception accurately out of that thought. And that is that a series of perceptions moving in a particular direction, particular life, will tend to continue moving in that direction in that particular life until the preconditions are forgiven. Until we begin to become the outside force that acts upon the way our mind generates the world that we experience, until we get back to where we live in our natural state, which is joy, which is just, you know, when love is present in physiology, whatever's going on in the world, the result is joy. It's just the underlying energy. Oftentimes when people do a worksheet, you know, over the years, the common feedback, you know, we did the Listen to My Voice book club out of London, England yesterday. And the woman that did the worksheet, you know, she chose to be the example of it. And Yinka guided her through the worksheet. And I was there as a support person for Yinka yesterday in doing that. But she started out with some really life-impacting, heavy-duty stuff. And there came a point right after she engaged in the forgiveness process. And, you know, I asked him, so what's happening? What's going on? And she was in such a profound energy shift as a result of using the worksheet. Think about it. I don't know what to say, but there's something moving in me. And the power of that worksheet process when engaged to open the door for something to move is just enormous. I know that over the years, the most common response I've gotten from people, I say, okay, so now that you've canceled that goal, now that you've collapsed that perception, what's going on for you? And the variety of memories that people tap into, the place their mind just goes automatically, always amazes me. You know, there's a line in the Course in Miracles that says, return your mind to the moment at which the error occurred. And people want to go back and remember the terrible thing that happened. They think it's a function of memory. But returning your mind to the point at which the error occurred is not a function of memory. It's a function of forgiveness. If in the moment where there's all kinds of disturbance going on in your physiology and your emotions in your mind, and you engage in forgiveness, that whole process collapses in on itself and gives you access to what underlies it. And most people, when they complete a worksheet, you know, as I've worked with them over the last 40 years doing worksheets, their response afterwards is like, you know, I don't understand why. I look at that now, there's like, there was nothing to it. Why was I was in extreme upset before I did this silly thing of canceling a goal. What happened that now I look at that situation, it's like, what was the big deal? Well, what most people miss is in between those two steps. When forgiveness occurred, they energetically accessed and processed a trauma that lie in the unconscious beneath the situation of the moment. Oftentimes processing through that, it's processing through the energy. It is not a cognitive shift. It is not something that becomes intellectual knowledge. Oh, it oftentimes is just a massive shift in processing of energy. And on the other side, somebody looks back, and if they're not fully conscious of what's just happened, they look back and they're kind of like, well, I don't even remember why I was so upset about that. Well, that's because what the real root of the upset was, you uncovered through forgiveness, and you processed through that energy. And so many circumstances that seem to be the source of upset, once you do a particular piece of work, that circumstance will no longer seem to be a source of upset because you process through the underlying dynamic, the underlying energy of it. And once you do one piece of work, then you do the next piece of work and the next. What happens is, as you do that work and you unload the burdens, you become more vital. You become stronger. And as you become stronger, you're able to reach into deeper parts of your own structure. And so, you know, when you realize that each of us is carrying around literally the unresolved generational issues of a thousand generations of our bloodline, unknowingly, you know, we wake up in the morning and go, this is normal, but what has become normal is a life of carrying the burden of unresolved generations of, you know, just look at what's happened in history, the hate, the war, the trauma, the generational pain, the genocide, the starvation, the deprivation. And unfortunately, from childhood, we're not taught how to process through those things. And from one generation to the next, to the next, to the next, when it's not processed through, it's just handed off to the next generation, handed off. You remember in the ancient scriptures, they talked about, you know, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. And most people have no idea where that even comes from, because the educational system has not shown them what it is that's being carried, what the trauma is. You know, why did this sweet little child end up in a, you know, a marriage 25 years later where there's so much hatred and vengeance and, you know, divorce and, you know, physical, mental, emotional, sexual abuse? Why does that happen? Because nobody taught us how to handle the unresolved energetic patterns of the generations, and being creators and creating unconsciously, we create out of whatever dynamics we hold within us. And if you ask the average person to look at what went before their eyes perceived life this way, you're like, don't make me look at my life. I don't want to go there. There's nothing we can do about that. Well, fortunately, there's a whole cadre of tools here, a whole set of tools with which to work through whatever you're carrying from the past. And this work is about supporting you finding the place of empowerment within yourself to literally do the heavy lifting of throwing off every fear, rage, guilt, grief, pain, drama, trauma. Think about what things you've been through in your life that you haven't perhaps worked through yet, what you watched your mother and your father go through, maybe your next door neighbors when you were a kid, maybe your school teachers or, you know, your friends or acquaintances, parents or, you know, family, sisters, brothers. You start to look at what most people are carrying. And it's just time for us to wake up beyond that and clean it up for the generations. Be a good ancestor. It's called being a good ancestor. And Jonas Salk, that to me is one of the most powerful ideas that he came up with. I think as important as the Salk vaccine. He said the most important thing you can do is be a good ancestor. What does a good ancestor do? They take hold of their genes. They become acquainted with their genes. They clean up what's in their genes. They pass on an improved set of genes rather than a set of genes that are loaded down by drama and trauma. They pass it on and they educate their children and their children's children and their children how to process and deal with these energetic patterns of the generations. That's what it takes. my offering to be a good ancestor. And so that's what this work is about, sharing with you. And we're delighted and honored that you're here to be part of the process. And it looks like we're down to about a little less than 10 minutes. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. We have 9 minutes.
Well, it's 9 minutes. So if you're out there in listener land, I'm complete with my monologue. And so if you're out there in listener land and you have something to share with us or a question about any of the tools or support needed, we'd love to hear your voice. Again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you on our control panel, your Jeannie's operating right now. Thank you, Jeannie, for all of those computer skills and especially the work you've done on my phone to get my phone transferred to the new phone that I've got. So, but if you're out there in listener land and we can't see you on our control panel, if you dial into the show on your phone, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening directly to the show. And then if you have a question, push 1 and raise a hand in the control panel, and we'll be having a conversation. So what's on your mind? How can we support you? 563-999-3581.
It is all quiet.
Everybody's on quiet mode. Okay, well, I'm complete with my monologue, and so I would love to hear somebody's voice and question, have a conversation. But if nobody has a question for us, then maybe we'll just call the show a little early today. We do have a granddaughter here, and as Jeannie said, she'd gotten a call that her dad had had a minor fall today in the care home that he's in. And so we're going to go just check him out and spend some time with him. So if nobody has a thought or a question for us, I'm going to just say thank you for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.